This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more at robertaspizza.com.
Hardcore is a new series from Heritage Radio Network. Over 6 episodes, we're taking a close look at the rebirth of American cider.
Really, it wasn't until about 10 years ago that cider started to be revitalized in the United States.
From the science of fermentation.
So yeast, it's a fungus. It's a unicellular fungus.
To the magic of terroir.
What really excites us is thinking about communicating that very sort of spiritual aspect of knowing a piece of land.
We're setting aside our cider donuts to gain a deeper understanding of this singular beverage.
I love a cider donut. You don't have to have a cider donut with your cider, and I will die on that point.
Subscribe to Hardcore wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey guys, I'm Jimmy Carboni, and today is November 5th, 2019. We've got some great guests joining us tonight to talk about Jesson Kennedy's new book, The Bucket List Beer, 1,000 Adventures, Pubs, Breweries, and Festivals. So let's go around the room and introduce everybody.
Hey, I'm Justin Kennedy.
Justin, it's so great to have you back, man.
It's great to be here, Jimmy.
For over 6 years, and so proud of you with your new book. Is it already out? It's available?
Yeah, it's available now. It came out October 22nd.
Well, congratulations. And once again, what's the name of it? It's the
The Bucket List Beer, 1,000 Adventure, I don't know. Read it, it's right there.
Well, we got the crew. So everybody's here to celebrate and they're featured in your book. So
Hey. It's Evan Watson from Plan B Farm Brewery.
So Evan, you're featured, there's a little section about, so this book is amazing.
It's really small compared to all these others.
They're all small.
For
there's
some
a thousand
reason.
Destinations, and one of them is the Hudson Valley. So
it the entries range from, I don't know, 50, 60 words to 200 words. And the Hudson Valley has a pretty large entry, 200 plus words, and Evan's awesome brewery is featured.
Evan, do you feel special?
72 words. I feel that special.
and then a pub owner here.
Hi, I'm Catherine from the Blind Tiger. We're lucky enough to be featured in the book.
One of my favorite.
So Catherine, so you're in the what section is Blind Tiger in?
So for Blind Tiger, it's in the New York City section. The book is arranged geographically, and there's an entry there about the Christmas in July festival you guys do.
I want to say, it's a very cool book. Thank you for the advanced copy, and it's beautiful, a lot of photos. I know you had a lot of collaborators, but at first it took me back to places that I'd always wanted to go, like Montreal and Due to CL and places in Belgium and Copenhagen and England, and even our good old friend in Cooperstown. Belgium comes to Cooperstown.
Yeah.
How did you put together the list of all these different festivals and breweries and places?
Well, a lot of it's just like, you know, personal experience over the last, 10, 12, 15 years of drinking and going to festivals and going to breweries and bars and stuff. So, you know, just kind of thinking about what I thought was what stands out to me in terms of like great festivals, great bars, great breweries, great beers. There's some tours in there, you know, like, you know, specific things that are worth going out of your way to experience.
What are a couple that really appeal to your interests, you know?
In terms of festivals?
Yeah, like festivals, destinations.
Yeah, festivals are like a dime a dozen these days, and a lot of them kind of suck. So I was thinking about what, you know, festivals that are unique in some regard. So something that's, I was just at the Shelton Brothers Festival. That's an example of a festival.
The festival.
Now you're brave.
Even Evan doesn't get invited to that.
No.
I think he's been to one or two, no?
No. Thanks for bringing it up.
For that one, it's a mix of a lot of imported beers and domestic beers. And the brewers themselves, I think, are required to be there. So there's, or somebody from the brewery, which I think is a major part of a great festival, is having somebody who can talk about the beer to the festival attendees there. And they don't oversell it either. You know, it's there's a lot of people there, but it's not like crazy.
No, that's
crazy
great.
Crowded,
there's so much in that book. It's really, so, Catherine, you really got inspired by this book. So tell us about your bucket list. And I think you brought a couple of beers in, too.
I did. So one of my all-time just favorite beers is, or breweries, is the Dre Fontaine. And I brought the Oud Creek, and we're drinking it right now. And as Evan was smelling it, he said,
what did you say,
funky,
Evan?
Funky.
Everything I do gonna be funky. From now on.
And that's how this beer makes you feel. And it's just delicious.
It is, yeah.
And this brewery's in your list as well.
Yeah, so Dre is definitely in the list there, and you know, they were at the Shelton Brothers Festival, and it was cool to see people lining up for that type of beer rather than the hazy IPAs or whatever. So,
Evan, what's on your beer bucket list? Is there some place you really want to go that you've never been, or?
Besides going to Poughkeepsie,
I mean, what? I want to go to Plan B Farmhouse now and see it in its glory.
Oh, it's always glorious, Jimmy. What are you talking about? I think personally, a time and a space, you know, I think my bucket list would involve a time machine. It involve like going back to drinking real ale that semester I got to study abroad in Scotland or whatever, and as a 20-year-old and being in those pubs. I mean, or, you know, the first Boone Goose I ever had, or Mariage Parfait, because things, you know, you wear down your palate, you wear down experience after a certain amount of time. And I don't know. I'm looking forward. One of my favorite things, I mean, bucket list, I guess that means things to do before I'm 6 feet and taking a dirt nap, right? Is that what you're talking about? Before I kick the alternative title
could have been 1,000 things to drink before you die or something.
I'd like to go to Orval. I know John Hall, your rival radio podcaster, is in.
He's there right now.
I'd like to go there. That's an important beer. I know Catherine probably.
Yeah, that's definitely in the list. And I think, time travel is not part of the beer, part of the book. But you're right, going back to experience different things at different times would be amazing.
Well, it's actually relevant because in the book in England, like, for example, you have Hook Norton, which is a brewery in England. And
it's one of my favorites.
Tell us about that. There's some traditional methods.
Yeah, there's
that they still use.
It's a mix. I mean, like McSorley's is in there. You know, I think McSorley's, the beer sucks, but it's a cool experience, right?
You went from Hook Norton to McSorley's?
Well, I'm just...
Hook Norton is a gravity-fueled, they're, you know, that's a beautiful thing.
I'm just talking about, yes. But, you know, it's not just about, my apologies to Hook Norton, but it's, you know, it's about institutions, I guess, is what I was trying to bring up with that. It's, you know, McSorley's is not my favorite place to drink, but it's a place you should go, at least a couple of times and experience it.
I'm going, sorry to, you know, take this in a way, but this weekend, on Saturday, I rarely get to come to the city except for the times that Jimmy asks me or Justin asks me to come down and say ridiculous things on a podcast. But I'm coming with a friend of mine who runs Rossi's Delicatessen, an amazing delicatessen, just got rated the best sandwich in New York, up in Poughkeepsie, and we're coming at, without children down to the city, and I'm creating a list of places to go. And one of those places is McSorley's, just out of nostalgia.
Yeah.
Because you gotta smell that. You gotta get the cheese plate.
Two doors from my house, bro. All right, call me.
But the first one we're settling down in is the Blind Tiger Ale House, which is,
of course,
iconic and an important cornerstone.
Where else are you going, Evan?
I'm trying to figure it out. Yeah.
You gotta look at the book. I mean, so in New York City, let's stick to the book. But so there's some neighborhoods. Tell us about another neighborhood we should visit in New York.
I mean, one of my favorite neighborhoods to go to drink in is Gowanus, because there's so many great breweries there. You got Three's Brewing, Volksbier, Other Half. Finback is opening a tasting room there. Strong Rope is there. And I think, let's see, within the next year, Six Point and Collective Arts will also have breweries, shiny new expensive breweries open in that neighborhood. So you know, just touring around there. And then Transmitter is now not too far away. So, yeah, anytime someone comes to New York City and asks for, if I need to go to one neighborhood to visit breweries, where do I go? I always say Gowanus.
Yeah. Catherine, how did you feel about having Blind Tiger on the list?
Oh, I was so happy. It's, you know, the Blind Tiger in New York has been around for so long, back when there were only a few craft beer bars. I think we were number two in Manhattan. And but now there's, you know, there's literally hundreds, and people do a really great job, and there's so many great places that you can go to drink. So just to be included on a list like this as one of the New York representatives is just, you know, it's exciting and it's an honor, because it used to be, if you're in the craft beer world, you absolutely knew what the Blind Tiger was. And now that's not necessarily the case. So, and you know, any more people that we can get who will come in and see what it's like, you know, that's great. And people who might have not been there for years might go like, oh yeah, the Blind Tiger, let's go check that out. And we tried, you know, really to make sure that everyone has a good experience and great beers.
I mean, for me, I keep thinking that, wow, I'm going to keep this book next to my bed. And anytime I think, at least in my mind of traveling, I'm going to go to the book first. And that's, is that kind of what you wanted to do?
Yeah, that was the idea, because it's a, you know, it's a big book. It's a coffee table book, a bedside book, a toilet read, whatever you want to call it. It's meant to be browsed and, you know, read the entries pretty quickly and
And it's Jumper organized numerically, chronologically by, no, I'm trying to help you out, by
yeah, how's by it organized?
Proximity,
yeah.
Right?
Best to so, worst?
No, I'm, you
right,
know,
it
so
starts
if
with
you
New
were,
York, right?
If you were thinking about traveling to a destination, they are clumped together numerically,
by region.
Chronologically.
By right? region, yeah, geographically. So it's a lot of U.S., the first three chapters are U.S., and then Canada, Mexico, the Americas, two chapters on Europe, a chapter on the Middle East and Africa, and then Australia, New Zealand, and Asia.
Well, let's just go to Europe then. And just looking at the pictures, like Copenhagen always jumps out.
Yeah.
Everybody knows about McKellar, but what are some other places? Like you, I like that you mix in beer bars as well as breweries.
Yeah, so it's not just breweries. I mean, in most of the world, visiting breweries isn't really a thing like it is in, you know, most of the U.S. I think you got to go to bars and visit them. But in Copenhagen, you know, there's a lot of really cool bars. There's one called Cool Ship that has like probably one of the best lambic selections in the world. It's a lot of vintage stuff that's from a personal collection, so you're going to find stuff there that you would never see anywhere else. And then, yeah, some breweries too.
You got Amager Brugis, which right. is Denmark. And then, Evan, you, when I mentioned Hook Norton, tell us about Hook Norton, because that's another thing about this book. It's kind of like the original, that great Michael Jackson book, where you could see the different sure. places in the world. I forgot all about Hook Norton. 10 years ago, I used to drink their beers from Shelton Brothers. What's unique about them?
Well, I believe they still function in this very vertical brewery.
Yeah.
That has from the top, instead of using pumps and augers, things that require a lot of power to move grain upwards and move water upwards and around and pump through, they're almost entirely a gravity-fed breweries. I've never been there, but I'm a nerd when it comes to old beer stuff, and the way that it operates is it seems really romantic and beautiful, and those things I aspire to up at the farm. But to have that, you know, to have the water at the very top that's coming down and milling at the very top and all those things that come down eventually, that, the, you know, these things that now we think of maybe are environmentally economic because you're not using power or whatever, these things came out of necessity because you didn't have right. engines or yeah. motors or modern sense augers or any of those things, yeah.
Yeah, then well, you know, tell us more.
And they make beautiful 3.5% real ale.
Are they
you pull out of a pump and you have mustache.
That's why I don't know.
I haven't seen their beer around.
I love that it's in the book. Evan, tell us again, because so you obviously have places like that on your bucket list or in your mind.
Yeah, I haven't been there. Somehow subscribe.
Tell
to
us another one.
I don't know. How.
Tell us another one that's in your mind.
Of in that realm.
Any realm of the old
I've
style
never been
beers.
To Cantillon. I've never been to Brussels. I've never been to Belgium in my life, and yet I make a lot of beers in this country that I'm very honored and almost embarrassed to be included in those styles of beer and spontaneous beer making and things like that. I've never been there. There's part of that for me that I don't want to go because, you know, never meet your heroes kind of thing. You know, I'm going to go there and I'm like, really? This is what.
But the good news is you can drink that beer pretty regularly.
Can't but you? Know, is that, that's, home, but.
You think that way? Never meet your heroes? Tell us more about that.
Wow. So, getting laid down on the couch. I think that there is,
Evan trimmed his beard since I last saw him. So.
Yeah, and I have glasses.
And so. He's been doing barbecue recently.
I'm like, my friend says, when I put glasses on, because I never have glasses and I look like a buffoon, he's like, you're like Denise Richards in the Bond movie. You're like the fake scientist. I get a lot more.
Okay, so never meet your heroes.
Never meet your heroes. Well, I construct all of what we do at Plan B Farm Brewery out of this wild sense of what I understand to be true, and then I recreate it through historical things that aren't really based in science or, I mean, it's just based in tradition. I love tradition. I love the sense of regionality and all those things. So I think if I went to Orval or if I went to Cantillon, things that probably the two most influential breweries to me from a taste perspective, I don't know if I would gain something from it. I think I might be jaded by it. And I'm just worried about that. I don't know.
What about you, Catherine? You've been to a lot of breweries, been around the beer scene a long time.
I have been around the beer scene for a long time, but I haven't been to a ton of breweries, and I've never been to Belgium, and I've never been to my bucket list breweries. That's what I look forward to, really digging into this book and seeing, all right, help planning a trip and maybe eventually making it there.
Well, I feel kind of like, I'm for me, it's like this book, I'm going to live vicariously. It's going to remind me of the beers I really want to drink, and I'm going to drink them here in New York City, maybe.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, just because you can't travel there, you know, it's also recommendations for beers to look for, like Cantillon, Orval on the shelf, which are pretty readily available in most major cities in the U.S.
Now, let's do one more beer. I don't know what's
you
next.
Do this one?
So you brought some Plan B, or what did you bring?
No, forget it.
It's not a Plan B beer.
No, Catherine. Let's do a Plan B.
Catherine brought a Plan B.
You want to try that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you guys opened that. And Catherine, what were you going to say?
I said I could probably do it with my ring. Let's see if that's true. It might explode.
With the wax?
Get the, with the wax.
So I've been to, you know, quite a few breweries around New York, but I haven't been to a ton everywhere except for some in California, some in New York. But there are so many good breweries everywhere. And that's what I love about the arrangement of this book is that it is by region. So you can say, okay, I'm going to be traveling to the Southwest. What is there? And you can open the book and, you know, find out what is there that you might be interested in. So I think that's a really great thing about the book. But we are living in an age where so many different types and styles and breweries, beers are available in New York.
Yeah.
So, you know, it might inspire you to say, like, oh, yeah, I have seen that brewery. I'm going to check it out now that I know something about it from reading about it in this book. I think that's a great.
Now, it reminds me of, like, Kermit Lynch, Adventures on the Wine Route. You know, he would go to, same thing about meeting your heroes. He would go to a winery, and he'd end up sitting down and drinking iced tea with the family for lunch. They were a little more businesslike than he expected, and that killed his dream. So, I don't know if you went through this. Are there any places?
That's a great book. I love, I mean, that was, that's a book I've read many times and never done the traveling, but you know, it reminds me of wines to look for when I'm shopping for wine.
Well, that's what's good about it. To me, an inspiring book about wine or beer is that person did the drudgery and the hard work, and we can sit back and enjoy. But for you, like, were there places that I'm sure a lot of the places you've never been to, are there some that you actually want to go to now that because
yeah, so I didn't write any of the Australia and New Zealand chapter in this book, another freelancer did, and I mean, I've been to Australia, but it's been a long time, and before I was into beer, and I would love to go there and travel and visit the breweries and see what's going on. But so maybe I'll use her recommendations when I go there.
That's great. So this next beer is a Plan B beer.
Yes, I brought it.
She brought it to surprise Evan.
I was choosing beers, and I said, oh, look, I've got a Plan B beer. I'm going to bring it. And interestingly, I think this is probably about 2 years old, and I haven't had my first sip of it, but I think Evan brought the same.
The beer, that's the most recent version of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we'll taste side by side.
Is this barn beer?
It is our barn beer, the beer of the barn. This is so interesting for me to taste. It's very different. But we culture yeast every fall.
So what's your barn beer? Evan?
Our barn beer is the beer of the barn. It's the most simple. It's the beer that I think of, like I mentioned, Orval, to be a little bit dry hopped, a mixed fermentation that sits in the bottle, just gets better and more interesting over time. But also all the beers are fermented differently. So there's, well, not all of the beers, but from the fall to the spring, we have a yeast, and from the spring to the fall, from harvesting from our raw honey, we culture a yeast. So this yeast in particular, with a little bit of age on it from this two-year-old beer that Catherine brought, it's got this, like, some, it's kind of still sweet, surprisingly. There's a sweetness to it, which you won't get in the fresh one. And then there's a big grapey note, which I get sometimes from culturing yeast, but I haven't had it in a long time. So it's like an old friend.
So my bucket list might be going through, like, a good beer bar like Blind Tiger and pulling out some old bottles like this.
For sure. I mean, that's, yeah, that's something I would highly recommend. Or your old place, Jimmy, too.
So how did you pick this beer for today? And where was it? Do you have, like, a special section in your
I do.
Lock-in?
So in the cold box, I have a section where either I pull a bottle or, if, you know, it, Justin had said that, you know, Cantillon's readily available, and I don't think it's that readily available.
I mean, you don't have
his circles.
Yeah, in his circles they are.
You don't have to travel to...
No,
you
can find it, absolutely. Right, yeah. But for instance, when I get a case, you know, maybe I get six bottles at the Blind Tiger. So what am I really going to do with that? Am I going to put it on the list and then, like, the first six people who see it are going to be super lucky and get it? I do that once in a while. But more often what I'm going to do is I'm going to pull it aside. And then if someone is there and they're celebrating an anniversary, I'll pull out a special bottle.
Yeah.
Or, you know, coming to a show like this where, you know, I'll look at my selection of, you know, what bottles I've pulled. And my bartenders can do that too. They have the, you know, ability to say, oh, so something special is going on here. Let's pull that bottle out. And, you know, I figure, like, that's the best way I can contribute with something like a six pack of Cantillon, which is just to try to get it out to different people at different times at an appropriate
And then you cement that experience in their minds. This is when I had these weird, wacky flavors that I somehow loved.
Yeah.
And then that's why Blind Tiger is the cornerstone institution of New York City craft beer, in my opinion.
So let's open a fresh version of Barnyard, too. And then we can talk
it's
about that.
Barnard, Jimmy.
Barnard. Justin, you know, how many states are in the book and how many countries?
I think all 50 states are in the book. I don't know how many countries, a lot. Dozens, I'll say.
And when did you start working on the book? Remember, the last book was it Scratch and Sniff?
Yeah, so first book is Scratch and Sniff. I know you didn't consider that a book, Jimmy, because you didn't have me on the show.
I want that book.
It's a great book. The Scratch and Sniff are probably not going to work anymore. They weren't working great to begin with. So.
You mean the technology?
That's right. The technology is a little
maybe
off.
One day.
It also had the worst publication date ever, December 26, 2017.
So you got buried after Christmas.
There is a publication error.
Maybe your daughter will grow up to make the greatest Scratch and Sniff beer book of all time.
There's another one that came out after that one, actually. There's two Scratch and Sniff beer books, and there's also two bucket list beer books. So.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
But so when did you start working on this book?
I started working on it last year, probably in October, November, and spent, you know, six, seven, 8 months working on it. So,
yeah,
it was
like
a lot of research.
I like
a lot
of turn of phrases too. I mean, it's really entertaining.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's a big project. I'll tell you some of the places I want to go. Like it reminded me, if anything, it reminds me of, we've had so many guests over the years, and I know you've been part of that, Justin. It's like Toronto. I remember the guys, Barvolo.
Thomas, yeah.
He founded the Cass Festival in Toronto.
That's right. That's in there. And he just opened a new bar. I think it's called Barvolo again, but the original location, or maybe it's Birrificio Volo or something like that.
Yeah, but that one, I opened his Toronto page, and there's a huge picture of his Cass Fest. I mean, it started as like 150 people. Have you been to that, Evan?
We haven't been to that, but he came up to the barn and got a cask from us.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's like a passion project.
He's a great resource.
Comes
indeed.
From a family of distribution, is that right? Am I
he
right?
comes from a restaurant family, yeah, in Toronto.
And let's talk about, so Tommy Arthur, the introduction is written by him.
Yep.
I mean, give us his backstory. One of these, like, craft beer pioneers.
Yeah, so...
I've never met him, so...
Tommy is... I've known him for a few years, but he started off at Port Brewing in San Diego And, you know, a few years later, founded the Lost Abbey, which I brought a beer here. I don't think we should open it yet, but maybe in a little bit. But, you know, when we were thinking about who's going to write the foreword, I thought somebody that is a good writer and is also, you know, has a history in the beer industry. So someone like Garrett Oliver or Tommy first came to mind, and we approached Tommy, and he was on board. So I think he wrote a very, very generous foreword.
Yeah, it's really great. And he's Lost Abbey. So we'll taste that later. And Catherine?
I brought a beer, actually, the Deux Amis, which is a collaboration between Lost Abbey and Saison DuPont.
Nice.
And we actually did an event at the Blind Tiger where both Tommy Arthur and Olivier, I'm going to mess his last name up, but it's De Decker.
That sounds right.
Okay, De Decker. Olivier and Tommy were there. And it was fascinating to hear them talk because Olivier's fourth generation in the DuPont family. And his whole life, he's gone to the brewery every day and brewed the same beer.
Yeah.
And then when he did this collaboration with Tommy Arthur from Lost Abbey, the whole conceit was, okay, use the techniques and the yeast from Saison DuPont, but bring in some American hops and Tommy's, you know, ability to work with those American hops. And so they did. And so Olivier talked about how when he came into the brewery that day and everything smelled different. And it just blew his mind, just, you know, coming to work and having it smell different.
But did they make the beer in Belgium or California?
They made it in Belgium.
Well, I think, was that 3 years ago?
2016.
Yeah. We did a live show with them. Yeah. So you brought that beer today?
Yes.
Great. Wow. So Evan, this other barn beer.
What?
What's, you have the second barn beer?
Oh, this is like the freshest batch of it. I wonder, I was trying to smell both of them quickly to be like, am I a brewery? Because these two things are so completely different.
They are very different.
Under wow. the same,
I smell hops, right?
Same skew. Well, that's what deteriorates over the years. And there's seasonalities. There's annual vintages. So, like, this beer changes. It has the same principle in creation. But even this, and like, this was a beer that was brewed in the summer where I have to add a lot more hops. Just frankly, because I'm cool shipping everything.
To preserve it.
Yeah, just so things don't drop in acidity, and it's a very fresh version. So it's almost like that previous beer without that saccharine oxidation plus a bunch of fresh hops. It's kind of interesting.
Honestly,
for me, and it's
they're really just completely different. So every batch is a completely different beer.
No, I mean, it's every batch is the same thing, but I'm dealing with a maltster, Dennis Nessel, who's malting
Hudson Valley.
Yeah, but malting barley from vintages of grown, particular one plot of six row organic barley over the years, and it changes every year in moisture content and protein content, DOM levels.
It's like vintage malt.
So everything, yeah, and hops as well. So hops, I've had hop guys in New York State that have fallen out that just don't even, the hops that were in the previous one we have, they're not even a hop farm anymore.
Right, because you're a New York State farm brewery, so you use...
I am, but I'm also, before that, I only used 100% New York State ingredients, including the microflora and fermenting cultures. So from the very beginning, it was all about that. And that malt came from a fish tank in north of Binghamton. So, like, because it was the only malt. It was the only malt in New York State at the time. I bought the first bag of legal New York State malt, and that was the first batch of beer.
Oh, you told me that was, what was the guy's name?
Marty Matrazzo.
At a farmhouse malt and beer.
Farmhouse, yeah.
Malt and ale.
Yeah, now they're a successful brewery up there in the Binghamton region.
Yeah.
But anyways, the difference, if you're asking the difference, is this one is the difference of 6 years of brewing beer. This is 4 years of brewing beer and the malts and hops that were available at that time, and it changes. Constantly.
Wow, this is on my bucket list, hanging out
for
with
sure.
Justin,
yeah.
Evan, and Catherine. Thank you, guys. Hey, let's just take a short break now. We'll be back in a minute on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2-Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Join Heritage Radio Network on Monday, November 11th for a raucous feast to toast a decade of food radio. Our 10th anniversary Bacchanal is a rare gathering of your favorite chefs, mixologists, storytellers, thought leaders, and culinary masterminds. We'll salute the inductees of the newly minted HRN Hall of Fame, who embody our mission to further equity, sustainability, and deliciousness. Explore the beautiful Palm House and Yellow Magnolia Cafe, taste and imbibe to your heart's content, and bid on once-in-a-lifetime experiences and tasty gifts for any budget at our silent auction. Tickets available now at heritageradionetwork.org/gala.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. You heard that? Next Monday, November 11th, it's Heritage Radio Network's 10th annual gala celebrating 10 years of food radio. We'll also be honoring the HRN Hall of Fame inductees. I happen to be on the list, but also is Evan Watson and Garrett Oliver and quite a few other beer notables. So check it out, heritageradionetwork.org. So we're drinking beer, talking about Justin Kennedy's bucket beer list. Book.
Got it again. Close enough, Jimmy.
The Bucket List Beer. 1,000 Adventures, Pubs, Breweries, and Festivals.
You can just say Bucket List Beer. That's
Bucket List Beer. Yeah. But we're having a great time tasting a bunch of beers. So the whole bucket list thing is pretty interesting. Sometimes I resist that concept until I realize that we all live our life that way. To me, the great beer book that everyone was inspired by, 25 years ago, the Michael Jackson book.
And of course, yeah.
It was similar in that it really showcased the places in the world, except there was only probably 100 places to go back then.
I think there were a lot more, but he really did the footwork in highlighting it, especially for American audiences, having those books published here. And I definitely relied on a lot of those older Michael Jackson books when I was researching for this book because they're still relevant and indispensable.
And I feel like there's definitely a IPA focus or American craft beer focus in so many American craft beer drinkers. How did you get the international focus to this book?
Well, we wanted to highlight so many different regions, and whatever's going on here is being copied around the world right now with, especially in Europe, New Zealand, Australia, the hazy IPA thing, the big sweet pastry stouts or whatever. But, I wanted to look at traditional breweries as well that have been doing this for a long time and aren't just, the flavor of the week or whatever. So, looking at a lot of those Michael Jackson books, other books and, just drinking beer from, I guess, importers that I like, Shelton Brothers, Marchand de Vin, and places like that.
So did you have complete control over the content?
Yeah, I did. Except for the chapters I didn't write. But I did.
That's great. God, do you guys have any questions for Justin about the book?
Yeah, how did you decide which regions to cover or how to divide that up?
Well, we wanted to include pretty much something in every state, which was a little tough because, I haven't really been doing much research in Nebraska or whatever, but there are some great breweries there. We wanted to have a big, diverse list that if you're going somewhere, you can look up in this book, find something that's in the region that you're going to. So we wanted it to be widespread. So there's places in, India and Ethiopia and, a lot of different countries in there. So it was a tough process just to put the list together. But, once we did that, started writing and finding other people to help out. So it was cool.
Evan, do you have a question for Justin? I bet you do. You can ramble, too.
What?
Just talk, Evan.
Are you accusing me of being a bit of a rambler? No, I guess, I don't know. The effort, I mean, I will say as an endorsement that I know Justin. I've known Justin for a while. He procures the talent for this very radio
show. Well, I used to. I'm not.
Yes, well.
A long time, over 6 years.
Yeah.
Remorsed. And that of other podcasts that we are not able to name.
Just steal his beer. Come on.
Because you'll start. It's like a Lord Voldemort scenario. You can't say his name. You'll summon him. I'll say though, knowing you over the time, I can see your
Carton Boat Beer is in the book.
Kids. Over half a decade, I've been able to see the way that you've dealt with different breweries, different flavors, what you gravitate towards, what you don't. And to me, it seems like you are a great curator of beer in this country and other countries as well, I guess.
Thank you, Evan. You
respect somebody and know somebody. You have a high watermark for what is good and what is drinkable and what is a good experience. So I guess the question, maybe it harkens too far back, but where did that come from? Where you grew up in Virginia, is that right?
Yeah, so I grew up in Virginia, rural Virginia, like
south. You came here and you're a writer.
Yep.
First and foremost, let's not disrespect the craft of writing. And then from there, how did you get into writing about beer in particular?
So I started writing about beer like in 2012, I think. I was going to NYU for the food studies program. And I really wanted to be a food writer and not a beer writer at all. But, you know, when I was going to NYU, I would go to places like the Blind Tiger. I would go to Jimmy's Place. I would go to Swift Hibernation Lounge. And, you know, there are so many cool places there to drink. And, you know, just going to the Tiger for the first time. And I remember I had, like, Hill Farmstead in 2010 or 2011, I think. And, like, just wondering, like, what the hell is this? Like, you walk in there and there's, like, the newest cool stuff. And then they also have, like, vintage kegs and other. It's, like, just a really inspiring place to drink and, like, getting interested in beer through that. I mean, I was interested in it before, but, you know, it was just, like, being around stuff like that, seeing the breadth of beer and, like, what it was becoming, it was just, you know, really inspiring. So that's how I got interested.
Were there beer writers that you looked up to in particularly at that time?
Yeah, I remember meeting Christian DiBenedetti there, who now owns a brewery called Wolves of People. Yeah. He wrote The Great American Ale Trail, and I remember just happening upon the Tiger one night, and he was doing his book launch there with Garrett Oliver, I believe. This was a few years ago. And, yeah, like him, Michael Jackson. I'll even say my good friend Josh Bernstein has been an inspiration for, you know, for writing.
That's great. And over the years, as part of it, you've put together some really cool things. I remember one year, I don't know how many years ago, it was at Folk Spear when Folk Spear was just opening. You'd put together a really cool tasting. It was like there was a Folk Spear dry hop pills cask. Remember that event? How did you put that together? And
was that the industry event? I don't know.
It was an industry event that you did, but you brought
in. Yeah, we used to do like
one room. There were more brewers than I've ever seen. It was only brewers.
Yeah, so we used to do some industry events there at Travis's place before they got started. So we would essentially just get people to, we would invite everybody in town and ask them to bring beer. Actually, we would actually just invite them, and then they would say, oh, do you want me to bring beer? And we're like, no, not really, just come hang out. But then they would always bring beer. So that was just like, I don't know, having fun, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, asking people to donate stuff, which is, it's a little tough these days. It was kind of like a private festival, though, you know? It was cool.
No, you've really been involved in things, and it's been great having you. One show that you did, worked on with me, I remember years ago, the controversy about contract brewing was such a big deal, and we had some brewers that were really outspoken who later stopped talking about it.
Yeah.
But remember we did the kind of the full list of contract brewing. Remember that you had six categories.
I don't remember that.
It got more and more complicated because it was like, okay, you contract, then you have things like Two Roads where it's actually was just being built to contract.
What are gypsy brewers?
Yeah, it was at a very right. That's what some of the things that we've worked on together, Justin. Thank you, because we've covered the whole scene. It was like back then, contract brewing was a big deal, and now there's places that are being built to brew other people's beers.
Yeah, I think the 12% place just opened up in Connecticut. I don't even know what they're called anymore. They're not a. Are they a distributor?
They are.
I've heard of them as a distributor.
Yeah. But they now have a brewery up in Connecticut, North Haven, I think it's called, the town's called, and they're making beers for all those different brands they have. It's really cool.
Brian Strumke just stopped in the Tiger, and he told me he'd just been up there to, you know, see the facility and meet everybody, and he's, you know, with Stillwater, you know, one of the 12% people.
Yep.
Yeah, let's talk more. So other changes like that. I mean,
there's
like
so many changes.
5 years ago, contract brewing was like this bad word. Gypsy was cool. Now we all do it. What about for you, Catherine? What have you seen? Like, in some, even just forget 10 years. The last 5 years, so much has changed. Like, if we wrote this book, I bet in 5 years, oh, 5 years ago, if you wrote this book, it'd be outdated.
Yeah, for sure, it's already outdated.
No, it's still good. I'll carry it to my grave.
It's a lot.
No, everything changes, and the biggest change that I see is just the sheer volume of breweries that have opened up, and you know, a lot of breweries are opening up at a, I'm going to say, a better quality than breweries used to open up. So that's a good thing to see. You always have to be aware of just because something's like new that it's not necessarily going to be great, but that doesn't mean you don't support them. You support them because people need to learn and grow into their brewery and grow into brewing. So to me, like the, you know, just the amount of brewers that there are and amount of breweries that there are is the biggest change. Obviously, the whole hazy IPA is a big thing. And what I think about with that, though, is how that's going to affect the change in the next 5 years. Because a lot of people were brought into the beer world with the hazy IPAs, juicy IPAs, as being their gateway craft beer. And so what does that lead to in terms of the next step as their palate changes? And I have no idea. But those are, you know, some changes that have happened and might happen.
Hey, quick, let's pop two more beers. Evan? What about for you? I mean, when I think about your place, let's talk about your place. You're on the list, Hudson Valley Breweries.
Yeah.
I mean, we were there in 2016. You were still just like fixing that barn.
Yeah.
What have you done since 2016? You've like torn down buildings and
with my bare hands.
Yeah, but I was there with you when you had, so your cool ship is like on the side of the barn. You open the barn doors and you can just, the cool ship kind of goes out on these beams and it gets all the air. Tell me some of the systems again.
All the air, Jimmy.
All the air.
It's like, give me more air. What's happened is that it's become a more of a destination. I mean, maybe it was. People always want the thing that it was before when it was barely touched. And when we used to have our old tent revivals out in the middle of a field, essentially. The gospel of wild beer. Snake handling. No, we didn't do snake. That was up to the patrons individually. There are a lot of snakes. But now we have this beautiful barn that we've renovated. Me and my buddy Robbie Gill helped finish all the interior of it. And it's like a really tucked in, weird place of Poughkeepsie, New York, which is a large city in a sense. And
Vassar College is
sure,
up there.
Sure, we're a mile and a half from Vassar College. I can walk to the train station, the last stop on the Metro North. And yet we're surrounded by 500 acres of zoned agriculture that dates back to the 1700s. And the buildings that we've renovated date back to the 1800s. And it's a spot where you can come up and just get sucked right back into that time, hopefully. We just built a beautiful stage where I've been booking some of my friends that live and play down in this region, and it's been great. Yeah, it's changed quite a lot. I mean, we still have a cool ship that wants all the air, Jimmy, but also, you know, there's more air to be consumed by patrons and and that of different beers. And yeah, it's fancy now. It's not fancy.
If we go back in the time machine, just back to 2016. Back then, you were selling what? You could only get your beers at CSAs that you hosted.
At the Beacon Farmers Market.
And people could, some days they could show up at like your driveway and buy beer, but you didn't really have a place for people to gather.
There's a lot of folklore surrounding those things. Originally it was like a tiny little, when I bought that bag of malt from a fish tank, we used to sell it out the back. I had a 16 by 10 foot shack where I was making beer.
But people are welcome there. So we could, if I'm up in Poughkeepsie, so. I should check out you. Do you know, there's another guy up there, King's Court. How's he
Cortland,
doing?
Yeah,
Cortland.
I know him well. Emily and I, my wife and I, and my child Ellie, we moved into the building that they've been renovating, 40 Cannon Street in downtown Poughkeepsie, and they've been trying to inject some cool stuff into Poughkeepsie, and that is one of those things. And also Zeus Brewing with a Meat Ram, who came from, he was the head brewer at Peekskill Brewery for the last 2 years, and previously a couple of years at Newburgh Brewery. That's also being established right now, and is set to open within this month or next month.
Wow. So Justin, next year you got 2 week free vacation sponsored. Where are you going to go from your bucket list? Where would you go? What city, and what are some things you want to do?
Anywhere in the world?
Anywhere in the world.
Probably Bamberg, Germany, to drink smoked beer. Rausch beer, yeah. To Mars Brow, to Schlenkerla, to... those are probably the two, and Speziale, but that's kind of my type of place, like the whole Franconian region. It's just beers that you can drink a lot of and feel good about.
So that's a place where, like, you've got this history, you've got these heroes.
Yeah.
Do you think that it's still, apparently this still lives up to its name, doesn't it?
I think it does. I mean, it depends on what you're into. If you're not into that style of beer, if you're, you know, doing beer tourism and you're only searching for what's new and exciting, then you might be disappointed. But I, you know, to me, that's the type of place I want to go. A place that has history, that has, you know, a lot of really good classic styles. And, you know, is in some ways like new and inspiring to me, because it's not like something that I've thought that much, you know.
Michael Jackson once called it the fifth element.
Wow.
What's the fifth element?
Smoke.
Smoke.
Yeah.
What are the other four?
Well, the other, you know, beer ingredients, whatever you call them. Malt, hops, yeast.
Water. And smoke.
And smoke. The fifth element. That's in the Discovery Channel, 1989 Discovery Channel series, The Beer Hunter.
Wow, that is very awesome, man.
So speaking of cool ship beers, this one might have turned a little bit, but we're drinking Allagash's Cool Ship Red, and I think it's from 2014, so it's a little old. It's a little tart for my palate, but...
So if you got that, were you at Allagash to get it, or did you get, like, samples here in New York?
I probably got that at Allagash at some point. I don't remember. But yeah, it's... I mean, that's...
What number is Allagash?
It's probably number three or four in the book.
Right, because it starts in Maine.
It starts in Maine.
It does start in Maine. So let's go through Maine quick. We have a few more minutes. So Maine, everyone's jazzed about it. There's a Pils Festival.
Pils and Love.
Let's talk about our trip to Maine next summer.
Yeah, Pils and Love. Well, next summer I think it'll be back in California. But Maine Beer Company, Oxbow Brewing, Navarre Res is one of my favorite bars in the world.
Bearded Lady's Jewel Box.
I don't know that one.
Oh, it's incredible. It's this really fancy, not really, but a guy had a speakeasy in his apartment that then became an amazing cocktail bar full of like tulle that they're shining rainbows on, and it's the best cocktails ever. Bearded
Sounds
Lady's
great.
Jewel Box. That's my favorite. I can tell a lot of lobster rolls, too.
Is that in Portland, Maine?
Portland, Maine, yeah.
Yeah, keep going. Let's talk Maine. Catherine, have you been up there?
I have. I had a great time. The people at Allagash, number one, they just roll out the hospitality like no other brewery in the world. And yeah, it's incredible. You go there and you feel special, and you know, it's an amazing experience. And they're at the end of a street called, I think it's Industrial Road.
Industrial Way.
Industrial Way.
Yep.
And then kind of on, you know, on the lead up too, there's a little complex where there's usually three or four breweries that are going right there, and breweries that have started there are breweries like Maine Brewing Company, Bissell Brothers,
yep,
a few others.
Foundation Brewing. Foundation. I don't know if they're still there or not, but yeah, it's like a little incubator for new breweries.
Yeah, it is. And it's such a great little strip, because, you know, you get Allagash, which is, you know, just one of the classics, and then you get all this innovation happening right next to it. And, you know, I was talking to Dave Cleveland once from Maine Brewing, this years ago. I think it was when he came down for the Brewer's Choice, and when he brought bottles, not even a keg at that time.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how great it was to be starting across from a place like Allagash, because when he had issues or anything like that, he would just, you know, kind of run over there and be like, hey, this thing is happening. What, you know, what do you recommend? Or do you have this thing that I need? And everyone's just, you know, very sharing and, you know, helping everybody develop. And I think that's part of what has led to Maine, especially Portland, Maine, and, you know, the whole area being such a great place for beer.
For beer, that's true. That's it to go out there. But I will say real quick, shout out the Eventide Oyster Company, then Honey Paw, then across the street you got Duck Fat, then you go around the corner, you got Bob's Clam Hut, then you go up to Oxbill Beer and Blending. Across the street there you got Izakaya Manaka and Terra Lingua. Just saying.
And Rising Tide's right there,
Rising
too.
Rising Tide is there, and there's a mead maker right there. But then you go down by the, you got Jay's Oyster, and you've got... I don't know.
Central Provisions.
You love Portland, Maine.
And Ree Rye, which is an Irish bar if you want a good pint of Guinness.
And don't forget Eli from Urban Farm Fermentary.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Man, I want to go to Portland, Maine.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. It's the best place ever. Yeah.
Well, this is a great book.
Shaheen, you got to get it.
Let's read from the cover. You read off the cover because I can't read it.
Oh, I can't read it. You got to do it. You got your glasses.
What's up? Oh.
Let's read the cover and the name.
This is how low we're going, Jimmy. The Bucket List Beer. 1,000 Adventures, Pubs, Breweries, Festivals. Justin Kennedy. Forward by Tommy Author.
Woohoo!
And one more thing. So
I said author.
Justin, like, all your time.
Like what, I was from Arthur. Long Island.
There must have been one beer session, Rady, that you worked on that you really remembered, or the booking or the guest that stands out for you.
Yeah, the one with Tony McGee from Lagunitas, actually, is one that stands out. He flew in when he released the book, actually. And I just remember that.
That was amazing. You reach out to him, and he literally flew in for the show.
Yeah, he had a much bigger budget for publicity than I do. So I rode my bike here. I didn't even get subway fare.
It only has one gear.
It's not a fixie, despite...
I know, I'm making a joke, buddy. It's the radio.
Well, you guys, it's been great having you guys. Any last thoughts, Catherine?
Oh, I just think I love this book, and I think it's such a great expression of the glory time in beer that we're living. And so everyone go out and try something new and go somewhere new.
Tell you, there's so many places to go. Just from doing the show over the years and looking at the book, it brought back so many great memories, Justin.
Great.
You know, places in England I want to go, Hook Norton. Our friends, St. Mark's of the Desert.
St. Mark's of the Desert.
St. Mark's, Sheffield, England.
Dan places. Martha Paquette, yeah.
What about any places in California? I know you've been out to some festivals there. We'll just wrap it up with California.
Yeah, I mean, Firestone Walker Festival is definitely a bucket list worthy thing if you can get a ticket to it. It's a one-day festival that's in a less than ideal setting of Paso Robles, but it's a really cool event with lots of brewers from around the world, and it's just a lot of fun. And then also, I mean, a place like Santa Ydiarius is really cool to visit. I don't know. There's so much you can do in California. It's
great. Guys, we're going to wrap it up. Everyone, just one more time, just say your name and your affiliation.
Yeah, Justin Kennedy, author of Bucket List Beer.
That's it.
Evan Watson, Plan B Farm Brewery.
Catherine Kyle, Blind Tiger.
Well, thanks you guys so much for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. If you have questions for us at Beer Sessions Radio, you can email us now at askbeersessionsradio@gmail.com, and we'll answer on the air. Next week, we'll be talking about Cider Week, so reach out with questions for our cider experts. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producer, Justin Kennedy, forever. Emeritus, thank you, bro. Over 6 years, and you're the rock star. New producer, Dylan Hoyer. Our intern, Kevin Chang Barnum, who's been doing it for a while. And our engineer extraordinaire, Matt Patterson. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Woo! Cheers.
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. and we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.